I call this House Education Committee to order. And today, members, sorry about a few minutes late start, just getting the technology set up. First order of business is the minutes. I represent Senator Murrah. Have you had a chance to look at the minutes? And were you willing to move the minutes? Thank you. Representative Senator Murrah moves the minutes for February 15th, 2024. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. The minutes for February 15th, 2024 are adopted. Good morning, members. Our first two committees, we heard an overview from MDE on all the different programs that they're implementing for us and that we passed during session. Today, we're actually going to hear from the schools around the state on how they are going about implementing the programs themselves with money we've either sent them or some of the programs that they've been very creative about getting off the ground. We'll be hearing from Apple Valley and the Barr Center, Moorhead, on how they utilize the change we made to long-term facilities maintenance language. We'll hear from the Farmington area schools and how they're doing school-based health centers. St. Anthony New Brighton will talk to us about universal meals. Northeast schools, Northeast Metro Intermediate District 916 will discuss special ed funding. And Northfield Public Schools will talk about the increase in indexing on the formula. And Minneapolis Finley will round it out with talking about career in tech ed. We have offered like 5 to 10 minutes for presentations. I'm not sure if we'll have time in between for questions or if the folks speaking have to get back to school. But we will try to see if we have time for like a minute, question or two in between. But they do have, we can get you all their contact information so that you can email them and ask them any questions that you might have. And just in case we do get close on time at the end, I wanted to just give you a heads up. We are not meeting tomorrow. We are giving up our remote access to our cart so that we will be not meeting. We will be meeting on Thursday to hear some of our first bills. And then the week after, we will not be meeting on Tuesday or Wednesday due to caucuses. So just in case I don't get that to that announcement at the end, I wanted to put it out front. So we have our first presenter is the principal of Apple Valley High School, Principal Drew Morris here to, to talk about the Barr Center. Had kids go to Morris, so I see the M-O and my brain just goes there. Go ahead, get settled, and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Drew Mons, and I am the proud principal of Apple Valley High School. Apple Valley High School is part of District 196, which is Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Eagan. Our school serves just under 2,000 students, and I'm here today to talk to you a little bit about the Barr program. We're working in partnership with the Barr Center, and this is our first year of implementation. I want to thank you for your time and being able to just, I think, share some of the successes that we've been able to do. I'll talk a little bit about the experience. With that, I do want to just name quickly here, Burnsville is part of the Apple Valley and Rosemount Eagan School District. So our hearts are heavy here this morning with the tragic loss that took place here on Sunday. Thank all of you for your support and everything you've done to take care of our first responders and us as schools. I have the best job around. I say that all the time because I get to be the principal of Apple Valley High School. It's a tremendous district that we're a part of. And we like to say that learning looks different at Apple Valley High School because we're a little different. We have 4 comprehensive high schools. Of those 2,000 students that I mentioned, we have the highest percentage of students that qualify for special education services. We have the highest number of students that qualify for multilingual services. And we're almost a 30% gap between the next closest high school when it comes to compensatory ed funding. So when we talk about some of these successes and our pride in our place, none of those things are deficits, but it speaks to the need that we see for our students. So this last year, we were part of, we submitted an application late in August to apply for the grant that the Barr Center, in partnership and with the support of the legislature, was funded. To be able to implement for 3 years of coaching a program that really fit nicely with who we are as a school. The principles of Barr rest on data, and on relationships. And if you talk to any educator, that's really what the key to what they see of why they got into education is wanting to build relationships. And relationships are transformative for the trajectory of all students. And that's one of the things that we really love about BAR, is BAR enables us to have a structure to be able to focus and to be able to talk about every student over the course of the year. I'm a parent. I have two students, one in high school, one in middle school. And that is one of the things that I think is really important is my kids, they do well in school. They like school. I also want to make sure that people know my kids and that they don't just know what their grades are or where they fall in with the GPA, but they know what my kids are about, and they find ways to be able to kind of seize on opportunities to help them think to possibilities that maybe they didn't know of. So in this last year, as I noted, we started in ninth grade. We formed two houses, and I was able to use some of our compensatory funding. And that's a key element for us here, because I was able to hire a new English teacher, a new social studies teacher, and a new science teacher. And the three of these folks, they team, and we're able to develop time for them to be able to collaborate. They don't team teach, but they have three structures as part of the BAR structure in a week, but they're able to meet with each other. They're able to develop programming for the students, but most importantly, they're able to sit down and just talk about those students and to be able to note students that they have concerns with, and they're able to develop SMART goals for each of those students and to be able to respond. These last 4 years have been really challenging, obviously, for every school. We saw some of our lowest passing percentages over the last couple of years here. When we looked at our data following the first trimester, we saw that as far back as I could see, our ninth grade where we had implemented actually had the highest passing percentage of all of our grades in the high school. And that was pretty incredible. We were very excited to see that across our high school, we had a 94% passing rate. In ninth grade, it was just over 95%. When we looked at the students that were part of those houses working with those six teachers, the passing rate there was 97%. So that's really an incredible total. And when we think about that piece, it's obviously that helps for so many reasons, but it makes sure that kids are starting off their high school careers in a place that they're on track for graduation. So I think some of those numbers I think are important to share with you to be able to see in early implementation. We've also seen an increase in the attendance rates for those students. And we also just were able to see a different percentage of connectedness that those students have. I was visiting one of those small team meetings that they had last week, and three of the teachers, which was a pretty exciting thing, they had two students that they were down to that they were really concerned about in terms of where their academics were right now. They were able to dedicate that entire meeting to looking at a column that they have of students that are connected, or in this specific meeting, students that are not connected to a club, an organization, a sports team, and those things. And they were able within 48 hours to kind of tap shoulders of four of those students and talk about getting involved in this club, or have you thought about math team, what about quiz bowl? And when you think about, you know, all the challenges that we've seen over these last few years and not seeing that same kind of connectedness, getting to students early in that point, having them feel connected, knowing that an adult believes in them, knowing that an adult is exhibiting that care, I think is just super important. And BAR has provided the structure for us to do the things we've always done, but just with more intentionality. Another example that I'm going to be able to share at an upcoming meeting here, I couldn't bring any students today. They always do a better job than we do as the adults. But one of our students is a great example of this. He's a young man who made the transition into high school. His teachers, as part of these meetings, started seeing just that he was in all on-level classes and felt that he could benefit from a little bit more push. So selfishly, those teachers would probably want to keep them with themselves. They wound up tapping the shoulders of this young man. He is now in a honors government citizenship class here in the second trimester, earning A's across that board. And when you think about the piece for a student like that, to know that some of those adults think, not only can you do this and access these high rigor courses, but we think you should do this now and not have to wait a calendar year, I think it really speaks to the testament of just those relationships and, again, using that data. So we're just very excited about that opportunity to be able to provide these kinds of outcomes for students. And I wanted to make sure that I could, again, speak to just the importance of being able to see the grades and those things are very quantifiable and easy to measure, but also just that feeling that the students have through there. Two of those teachers that are working in our BAR program, they're brand new to our school here this year. The ability for them to be able to mentor and support, and I think one of the key attributes of BAR is that it starts from a strength-based asset. So those teachers, when they meet together, they talk about each of those students and they name those students' strengths before they start going into anywhere that they're talking about concerns that are coming up. And when you think also just teaching, much like legislating, it's a hard gig. But when you know that you're not doing it alone and you're able to use, you know, the group and you're able to find those positive mindsets there, you can really create incredible outcomes. And that's what we're pretty confident that we're able to do here. Look forward to being able to come back and share more information in a future meeting. But for that, I know I want to be careful, especially being the first in time, and I do have to get back to a 2,000-kid lunch at some point. So I'll open up if there's any questions you have for me.
Thank you, Principal Mons. Does anybody have any questions or clarifications for Principal Mons? Seeing none, thank you so much. And we look forward to hearing from students on
thank you.
March 5th.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Next up, we have Superintendent Burke from Farmington Area Public Schools. And I believe we have him remotely. So go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Jason Berg, Superintendent of Farmington Area Public Schools. I want to thank the committee and members of the committee for the opportunity just to share a little bit about school-based healthcare and the grant that we were fortunate enough to get with Dakota County just recently. One of our strategic frameworks and guiding principles is to protect the well-being of our learner. To that end, we look for opportunities to partner with various outside organizations to fill gaps within our district and within our greater community. We are a district that doesn't generate quite as much revenue as our neighboring districts, so we need to maximize those internal and external resources whenever possible. We started this journey around healthcare back in the fall of 2001 when we partnered to bring in Minnesota Community Care into our Farmington area to help provide some medical services. If those of you that don't know, MCC is a federally qualified health center, meaning that they provide primary care and preventative health care services regardless of a family's ability to pay or their insurance status. Unfortunately, MCC closed this past December, which left a significant gap in our community. In the 2+ years that MCC was open, they served over 6,000 patients, and over half of those patients were at or below the 100% federal poverty line. In addition, our nurses and our nursing offices made daily referrals for our students and families to seek care at MCC. So clearly this left a huge gap in our community to access affordable health care. Our demographics in our community continue to change. Currently we have about 27% of our learners receive educational benefits. We currently have about 8% multilingual learners, which is not a high number for some districts, but for us that has doubled in the past 10 years. And then we started looking at our attendance a little bit, and a significant number of our absences are related directly to medical or dental appointments, almost 40%. So we started thinking, with the loss of MCC and the amount of absences we have connected with appointments, is there something that we can do and bring into our buildings or building that would maybe provide those services and keep our kids in our spaces so that they can do what their primary job is, to learn? Dakota County reached out to us in November, and we've had a strong relationship with them since my time in the district. And they wanted to put an application into the Minnesota Department of Health for one of the school-based healthcare grants that they're out there. I believe there was 5 at the time. And given the timing and given the closing of MCC and given the uniqueness of Farmington High School, which actually has a clinic built into it, when we opened this building in 2009, the clinic was staffed with a provider. It was for Farmington employees and their families. And when that provider left, the clinic closed, and we've been using that space for other things. So we thought it was a no-brainer to have that opportunity. As I said, we were fortunate enough last week to find out that Dakota County and ourselves were awarded one of those grants. And we are fortunate to be able to be part of expanding school-based health centers. We have some work to do over the next year with this grant. Our primary focus is going to be to complete a needs and readiness assessment within our district. We have a general idea of the types of care that we believe that our learners and families will need: preventative care, mental health, and then a big one for us is immunizations, right? We get into later in the fall, and school just spend a lot of time of trying to help families and track down immunizations, and to have that be within and part of our district would be a huge asset to both us and our families. We need to work with Dakota County to identify potential healthcare service providers. And then probably the biggest thing for us is determining how do we sustain this? Like lots of things that are well-intended, if we're not able to sustain it and to have it be something that people can depend on, it's not gonna be used to the level that it should be accessed. So we're excited for this opportunity and this new grant that came through the Department of Health, and our goal is, if everything goes well, to have a clinic up and running probably in our high school in the fall of 2025 or the 2025-26 school year. So that's a really brief update. We're still drinking from fire hose, trying to figure out exactly what all of this means and what that partnership is exactly going to look like and who we're going to connect with. But we're lucky that Dakota County and MDH have a ton of connections, and there's already districts and schools that have done this, and we're going to lean on them as we begin to put our plan together. So that's a fairly brief update. Those of you that know me, this is pretty good for me.
Thank you, Superintendent Berg. Thank you for that partnership you started with Dakota County. Is there any other questions or comments from members? Representative Pryor.
Thank you for joining us remotely, and appreciate your testimony. It sounds very exciting what you're doing. I also trying to relate it to, I know other some of the other initiatives like the full service community schools. Is this those kinds of grants, is that something that you're able to use, or is that another model that people could use to do the things that you're talking about now, which is going out, finding, you know, identifying space, that kind of thing? And as can you touch on a little bit that too, please?
I think those would be another opportunity, and I think they can certainly be used in combination. For us, based on our circumstances and our partnership with Dakota County, specifically the school-based care clinic made the most sense for us. But you know, like anything, right, you kind of dip your toe in and you start to provide supports and services, and then you see how those might expand. So I'm very familiar with kind of the whole community school sort of a model, and there's significant work that goes into it, and they've been shown to be very successful, and for us, this is our opportunity to kind of begin to see what that potentially could look like and make sure we do one thing really well before we expand out. But I could certainly see where districts would maybe combine the two, or look at a different grant to do a similar sort of thing. I think the idea is to give districts opportunities to figure out how to best support the whole child when they come in. We know that kids don't leave whatever they have with them from outside of school at the door when they walk in, and we can only control so much time, and if the more things that we can push into as terms of support are going to make our environments better for our kids when it comes time to learning.
Thank you, Superintendent Berg. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony today. Just a real quick question. You said is if the funding continues to be available for you, and prior to this last session in 2023, one of the biggest complaints I heard from schools in my district was fund the cross subsidy, which was many parts an unfunded mandate. And so, what does that look like to you with so many new mandates that have just come through this last legislative session, and then looking out to the burden of you to be able to, everything is put into such silos, and it's not really money available to you to spend as you would need to do that in a local control setting.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think for us, you know, when I talk about one of the things that our clinic coordinator, when we hired that person, they worked with Dakota County is going to have to do is to ensure that this is sustainable through outside funding sources. We do not have general fund dollars right now to be able to dedicate to this. I mean, we'd like to, but we have other things that are pressing and things that we need to cover that came out of the 2023 session and just ongoing costs that come with running a district. You know, our internal increase on all of our expenses over the past 5 years has been 4.6%. So we need to be able to take existing revenue that comes in, especially when it's undedicated revenue, and use it to offset those things. So I think it's a fine balance of trying to figure out how to provide and push in these additional services without taking away from, you know, services you may already providing or not allowing you to do some other things that you'd like to do. So for us over the next year, a big thing is going to be how do we, you know, find funding from external sources to continue to provide to do this. And it may come through the provider, it may come through additional grants and things like this, but we don't anticipate having the general fund dollars to be able to push towards this to continue to going on. So that'll be a big question that we have to be able to figure out and answer, and that'll be part of what comes out of the planning as we move forward. So I don't know if I exactly answered your question around, you know, different things. You know, we did get a significant increase in revenue, but there's things that we do have to spend that money on, and we do have internal costs that continue to rise that eat up that money as well.
Thank you, Superintendent Berg. As we keep saying, 20 years of underfunding can't be turned around overnight. So thank you for your work down in Farmington. And with that, I'll move on to Dr. Tim Anderson, the Executive Director of Human Resources and Operations. Dr. Brandon Lunick from Superintendent Moorhead Public Schools, who is also with us remotely. Dr. Lunick, can you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Yeah, my name is Brandon Lunick, Superintendent Moorhead Schools, and I just want to thank the committee for allowing me to take a little time out of my day, maybe put you guys to sleep for about 5 minutes or so, talking about what's going on here in Moorhead.
Proceed, and you will not put us to sleep, I promise.
Well, I've done that before. So we'll see how good I am here. So anyway, I do want to thank you. This last session, you helped our school district immensely through gaining support for a $5 million transfer from our long-term facility maintenance fund to our capital fund, and the access to health and safety funding, which we were not allowed to previously. So your support on both the House and the Senate side really helped our school district get over the hump in terms of funding. So I'll just provide you a little bit of background. So in Moorhead here, we are building a brand new high school and a career academy. And it's a result of the bond in November of 2019, which passed with 76% in our community. So 76% of our community felt that the Career Academy and the new high school were needed. We did go out for $110 million. We knew that we would have to tap into some board-approved funding mechanisms to cover, because the original cost to do both facilities was going to be around that $116 million mark. And we knew that the parking lots were going to run about that amount, $6 million over the $110. So we felt like a good board-approved mechanism of using the abatement bond would have closed that gap. Well, then we all know that COVID came, and our cost escalated almost 35%. And so we're looking at all types of mechanisms to help close that funding gap so we could deliver on the facilities that we promised in November of 2019. And so we capitalized, we utilized six different buckets, I'll call them. Some of them were board approved. Some of them were ESSER monies, using them for career academy labs, vocational labs, those sort of things. But it was really your guys, your support of our district and our ask that allowed us to capitalize and finish this project. And I don't have, you know, I'm not going to wow you with my brilliance and my good looks. So I'm just going to tell you flat out, thank you from the bottom of our heart. And if there's anything you can do moving forward to help other districts that could be in the same, that were in the same position we were in terms of that health and safety flexibility, I know that we would appreciate it on behalf of the other districts, since we're fortunate enough to be the success story as a result of that. I think it's critically important that we continue to look at some allowable uses of health and safety dollars to grant us that flexibility so other districts wouldn't have to go through, you know, coming down and getting special legislation to make it happen. And I'll say this in closing, we knew that our, and this is why it's important that the flexibility is there, because the funding is, the mechanism is already there. Now we need to work on the flexibility. And because of that, we knew that if we had our OPEB bond expiring and we were going to replace it with the implementation of this health and safety bond, which would have been almost a net neutral tax impact to our taxpayers, but because we weren't allowed that flexibility, it ended up happening, but it ended up happening a year or two after we were originally wanting to utilize this mechanism. So again, thank you so much for your support. It's because of this legislation, this past session, and allowing us access to health and safety and the LTFM transfer that we were able to finish our project and deliver the project to our taxpayers as we told them in November of 2019. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Lunick. With that, members for the prior.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to see you again, Superintendent Lunick. This is Lori Pryor that visited there.
Hey, how are you?
So I just want to say, I do want to let the committee know this is an impressive facility, and it was great work that was done with that local community. And I also just want to make sure that we mention Representative Heather Keeler, that brought forward the legislation that made the case and made that compelling argument that this is something that we should do. And certainly she is somebody that can follow up and make sure other school districts have that kind of opportunity. So she's not on this particular committee. She's on our education policy committee. But we'll be sure and that she knows how much we appreciate the work that you all did out there and led by your local representative. And she really pays attention to your district.
Thank you, Representative
Krisha. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Superintendent Lunick, and congratulations on your project. It saddens me that you have to come and ask us to get out of the way for you guys to do local things, but I'm glad we were able, there was able to be success there. Two quick questions. As you're talking about this, you're looking forward. Obviously, you have a long-term facilities plan, and you're doing that. And one of the things that you mentioned was flexibility. And I'm wondering, as we look forward, what other ways could we untie some of the limited use funding to constraints that would help school districts out with some of that flexibility? And the other thing I worry about when I look at the long-term facilities process, right now that seems to be very burdensome to school districts, that for you guys just to do small improvements, there's a very, very large process involving MDE and applications and approvals, which seems to be way too burdensome for schools. So I'm wondering if you have some insight on that and some things we could work for going down the road. And then if you could just share, you know, from my experience with schools and school finance, you start to do these facilities and you're trying to remove uncertainty, but you're also going to have some uncertainty about where some of that ongoing funding is going to be and how that might impact cutting FTEs or other revenue sources. So if you could just talk about all that, talk about the success you have, which is great, and then looking forward, what other things could we remove and untie constraints for?
Superintendent Lunick, Superintendent Lunick, I'm sorry. We only have a few more minutes before I have to move on, but if you could respond as best you can. Thank you.
Yeah, I will do it as quickly as possible. So a couple things that come to my mind in terms of the question. I feel it was a two-part question, one on the building side and one on the operating side. And when we talk about, in my opinion, freeing up dollars, one of the things that becomes critically important to us, and I'm thinking many others, is the cost of building a facility is escalating at 3 to 4% a year. And in our landscape that we're in today, the retail environment is changing. And we took a big box store and we turned it into a really, really, really nice facility. And so I'm thinking there's going to be other districts that might do something similar just because the cost is easier to control. And for instance, in our facility at the former Sam's Club, if we were all in with fees and everything for about $23 million. I was told by our construction team that if we were to do it and build it brand new, we'd be well over 55. So when you start taking these big box stores and the parking lot's already there, that infrastructure's already there, and now all you got to do is just go and build it, but you're confined to those four walls that are already there. That's important. And health and safety is a mechanism that is allowable. And so it'd be really, really nice to continue to allow us to have some flexibility with that LTFM, or with the health and safety. On the operating side, I think it becomes important that we, as a state, we have to come together to determine, you know, what could our priorities be. And there's so many things that are on our plate, so many things that come at us, that it would be nice just to slow it down a little bit and allow us some time to digest, like example, what happened last session, the REIT Act, for example. Wonderful program. We believe it's the right thing to do. We would just request that maybe we're given some time and let's focus on the implementation of the REIT Act so we can get it right, and which would benefit our students, benefit our community. And those are some of the things that I think I would focus on moving forward, if that answers your question.
Thank you, Superintendent Lunick. In the last two committee hearings, we talked about just that with MDE, about how the implementation is going and what we might need to tweak and do to help districts implement the stuff we put into place. So thank you for joining us, and I'm going to move on now to Dr. Tim Anderson, who is the Executive Director of Human Resources and Operations for St. Anthony New Brighton, who is also remote and will be talking about school meals. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Tim Anderson, St. Anthony New Brighton, and good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for the chance to briefly address you about the impact legislation, universal meals legislation has had for our students. And before I do just a few bullet points, I would just mention what a thrill it is as a former social studies teacher and former student of your colleague, Senator Steve Swadzinski's, to address those who serve as policymakers in our great state. So I'm thrilled to be with you for this brief time this morning, and really happy to speak to how the new legislation, Universal Meals, has made a positive impact in our schools. St. Anthony New Brighton shares a nutrition program with Roseville area schools. And here in St. Anthony, we serve just under 2,000 students. And I would mention that it has been a huge adjustment for the increased meals we are experiencing from every student receiving a free breakfast and free lunch this year. But our team is excited about this challenge. And like many, many districts across the state, you know, staffing has been a challenge to fully staff our kitchen crews. So like so many, they've risen to the heroic and historic challenge to provide food for our kiddos. And it has been a huge positive to hear from kitchen staff that they're hearing from students how great the meals are now that they're accessing more of them. So some of those highlights for our district, our daily participation has increased substantially. Breakfast counts are up 60% from what we're used to, and lunch counts are up 45%. So together, that's about double what we expected coming into this year. That's been a huge increase. We do have an integrated program on Thursdays from our local farm to table initiative, more things being made from scratch as a part of the effort. We're all in on increasing the service we provide for kids. And due to the high volume of participation, there's been even some talk about, do we need to do some renovating in our kitchen space because the demands are higher than the space allows. But overall, the universal meals legislation has made a positive impact in our schools. We've seen huge increases in the number of students taking advantage of these programs. We believe our students and their families are no longer experiencing the same food insecurity that we know that they were prior to this legislation. And just knowing that kids can look forward to receiving two solid meals a day has been a huge positive of the 2023 legislative session.
Thank you, Dr. Anderson. Members, any questions or comments on universal meals? Thank you, Dr. Anderson. I'm glad that your kitchen staff is excited and rising to the occasion, and I know there has been a lot more demand that districts are kind of trying to figure out how to work with that, and we will be keeping an eye on seeing what we need to do next session to help with that as well. So with that, I will move on to Dr. Val Rabeau, Superintendent of Northeast Metro Intermediate District 916. Thank you for being here today, and as soon as you get settled, just state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Val Rabeau, Superintendent of Intermediate District 916. I am here on behalf of the four intermediate school districts to express our appreciation for your support of our Setting 4 special education programming. I'm also very grateful for the opportunity to share some information about the highly specialized work of the intermediates and how our staff, students, and member districts have all benefited from the financial support provided this last legislative session. The four intermediates collectively serve over 20,000 students annually. Many of those students are served in our Setting 4 programs. Setting 4 special education is provided in a separate site for our full school day, and that is outside of the general education setting. This is determined when students have needs beyond those that can be met or provided in a less restrictive educational environment. Our highly trained staff provide specialized services in our innovative programs to support our students with the greatest educational challenges. We want to thank you for Special Education Separate Sites Program Aid. As an abbreviated description of how the intermediates use some of these funds, intermediates are educational service agencies. We provide services which are billed back to member districts for the students enrolled in our programs. 916 will be using the special ed program aid to reduce costs to our 13 member districts. We are also very thankful for your continued support for the Innovative Mental Health Grant. We have seen a dramatic rise in the numbers of students enrolled who not only have a disability, but who also have significant struggles with mental illness. Some students are referred to the intermediates with multiple mental health diagnoses, many taking one or more psychotropic drugs, and most have not seen a physician or a psychiatrist to monitor the effectiveness of both of those powerful medications. Most students have not been involved in the necessary psychological counseling to treat their mental illness. Some become violent towards others, some are self-injurious, and some show extremely anxious behavior, and some are in the depths of serious clinical depression. To watch a young person experience an episode brought upon by their mental illness is heartbreaking. These are the special education students we serve. Our teachers are trained as educators. Their primary role is to meet the educational needs of the students on their caseloads. Yet so many of the students we work with have been emotionally unavailable to learn. It used to be typical to hear a teacher say, "I had a pretty good day. I actually got to teach some reading for about a half an hour. We now have many days where students are able to engage in learning for much of the school day. This is in part because of the innovative mental health grant dollars that allow us to bring clinical therapies into our programs. When students have access to appropriate therapeutic help, they become more emotionally available for our teachers to work with them so they can build the skills needed to be successful students. Because of the funds available through the Innovative Mental Health Grant, 916 has been able to create and sustain educational mental health classrooms. We refer to them as EMHCs. Our EMHC program is a classroom setting that provides both educational and mental health programming to students in grades K through 8. The integrated model includes 3 hours a day of mental health interventions and 3 hours of academic instruction. The EMHCs within our Setting 4 program also allows access to family therapy at school to help generalize skills and encourage lasting positive change. The EMHC team also provides assistance to families to navigate community-based services. When education and therapy in the EMHC is successful, students are able to transition to a less restrictive level of care. And oftentimes that is potentially a Setting 4 program or classroom within our district, and many times it's been back to their home schools. Some of the additional use of the funds that we have been able to take advantage of were to build our community partnerships that enhance special education programming across all of our sites at 916. And we're continuing to build multiple projects centered on supporting our member districts. Every one of our students has a story that is filled with unimaginable life challenges. With the appropriate mental health programming, our most educationally vulnerable children can grow into productive citizens who will contribute in many positive ways to their communities. And these programs will continue to help mitigate chronic and long-term mental illness and school failure. Thank you again for remembering intermediate districts and our Setting 4 special education students. Our families and member districts see the direct results every day. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rabel. With that, any questions or comments about intermediate districts? I had a chance to actually tour one of the programs that had the incorporated model, and it really is incredible. And speaking as someone whose spouse works in a level four setting, seeing that transition back to home districts is really special. So thank you for working with students that have some of our highest needs.
Thank you very much.
With that, members, we're going to move on to Dr. Matt Hillman, who's the superintendent of Northfield Public Schools. And once you get settled, go ahead and just state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Matt Hillman. I'm the superintendent of schools in Northfield, Minnesota, and I'm the past president of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Chair Joachim and members of the committee, thanks for having me here today. Great to be here. Our democracy really just depends on your public service, so I'm truly grateful for all of your public service. I'm a big fan of Teddy Roosevelt, and I love that quote about stepping into the arena, which you all do every day, so thank you for doing that for us. Tough discussions here that lead to good results and unintended consequences right throughout the state, so thank you for your service. So among the dozens of items, maybe scores of items, that the legislature passed last year was indexing the basic formula for schools with inflation. And, of course, the basic formula is the amount of money that each school gets for each student that we serve. And that's something that I had championed and our organization, MASA, had championed for as long as I've been coming to the legislature. I had been asking you for it. So a heartfelt thank you for finally indexing the formula to inflation. If you've heard the old adage about real estate, it's about location, location, location. And for school finance, it's about planning, planning, planning. And so this adjustment of indexing the formula to inflation gives us a tremendously better position to plan from. And so when we look at that, and thinking about having the floor of being 2% and a ceiling right now of 3%, it allows us to do some things that we were not able to do previously. And so it means that we can make decisions with better information, a real projection of what an increase might be, as opposed to the assumptions that we had to make as part of our budgeting processes. And so as responsible fiscal stewards, we would have to be very conservative with how much we anticipated from the state. In all the years I've been involved with school district budgeting, we projected between a 0 and a 1% increase because we just could not afford to overestimate. And so because we are responsible stewards and because we budget in advance, those lower assumptions can have some real adverse impact on our planning. It can mean that we might need to prompt a budget reduction process sooner based upon that lower amount of money that we could anticipate from the state. So the fact that we are able to plan more effectively is awesome. There's no other way to say it. I'm super grateful for it. I think the second thing, we all know we're in a very tight labor market, and schools are no different than any other part of the labor market in this regard. And so having that ability to forecast allows us to have better information with which we can use to work with our local employee compensation plans. And so 80% of about any school's budget in the states goes to salary and benefits because we hire people to do good things for kids. That's what we do. When people say, well, that money that the legislature gave you, you're going to give it to your employees. Yes, because we're going to hire people to do good things for our kids. And so that's a really important piece. It also provided us with much better budget stability. And in Northfield, due to a variety of reasons, housing being a key factor, lower birth rates, we are experiencing declining enrollment. Very difficult. We're a community that's very proud of a stellar education system. And so to have 2 years of budget reductions was very painful. In fact, you want to—I learned that you want to get high school kids to show up, ask them to come and give you feedback about the budget reductions that are in front of the board. We filled our high school auditorium last year with kids during their lunchtime. They chose to come because stability isn't just for the school board or for the superintendent or for our principals. It's for our kids. And when kids know stability, that's a good thing for them, right? They have greater predictability. They want to see their teachers who they adore come back the next year. We had 2 years where we weren't able to do that. So the investment that you've made to tie the formula to inflation is significant. Now, we also, as Chair Joachim wisely said earlier, there's much more work to be done. We are making up for 20 years of underfunding. I'm happy I don't have to show anymore the chart that Brad Lundell put together, you know, about the gap between what the formula would have been in with inflation versus what it wouldn't have. But we still have work to do. So I'm very hopeful that the legislature would consider some additional funding on the formula this year. I hope in the future we can have discussions about that floor. I'd like to see that floor of 2% be a little bit higher. But that's a discussion for another day, not for today. Today we're here just to give our heartfelt thanks. Decades of asking for the formula to be tied to inflation coming to fruition has many benefits in the long term for schools. So on behalf of our school district and MASA, thank you so much for listening and finally getting it done for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hillman. And I'll add myself to advocating 20 years ago. We were talking about that as well as the SPED cross subsidy, and so happy we could get the indexing across the line this last session. I lost the battle on having it be the implicit price deflator versus the CPI, but maybe that's a discussion for another day too, because that's really focused on the services. Like you said, so much of your costs go to hiring employees to take care of kids. So thank you for also being a stalwart advocate. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Hillman, for being here. Sorry, it's always...
No problem.
Sorry. I need to look at my notes here, unfortunately. But I'm very interested in this discussion about how just indexing this one formula and one revenue stream, which is just the formula, as we call it, the big F formula, how that has managed to be indexed to inflation. Are there other formulas or other parts of state aid that would make a difference in indexing to inflation? And then what would that mean for Northfield Public Schools or for other public schools? I know you're here with some other administrators. So I don't know if that's something that you've thought about or something that would make a difference as well.
Dr. Hillman, we'll have to have you put your MASA hat back on.
You got it.
Go ahead.
Well, we were just thrilled to get the basic formula indexed to inflation. As we know, the special education formula has been indexed to inflation for some time, so that was helpful. I do think another area for exploration would be things around long-term facilities maintenance. We know that costs for those kinds of things, you know, continue to increase. So I would think anything where the market has that kind of inflationary impact, would be wise to investigate. Clearly, we take our time in determining when to index things to inflation, which I think is a prudent move. I think any area that affects you with inflation affects us as well. So if you can think of the things you wish were your salary was tied to inflation, we probably would wish for the something similar.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Dr. Hillman. Thank you for coming and testifying and for your work. You talked about Teddy Roosevelt, and you are also in the arena. And so thank you for the work that you do. And so you mentioned, my question is around the unintended consequences. So you mentioned that at the beginning, and I think it's important that that we have honest conversations about the unintended consequences or the intended consequences. So if there are some things that you, either in your superintendent role or your MASA hat, to put that back on, can you talk about some of the unintended consequences? And then what I really am curious about are some solutions to those unintended consequences.
Dr. Hillman.
Well, where to start? We are grateful for the real transformational work that you did the last session. There's a lot of good things that were in the new law that are going to do good things for kids. But as you know, I know your role on a day-to-day basis, the implementation dip, right? When we talk about implementing programs, there's always an implementation dip. And there's the part about how when you're taking really good policy and trying to make it work every day in a school, there's the natural challenges that come along with that. Today I would focus my comments only on one thing, which would be the READ Act. We are so grateful. This is, I'm a huge supporter of advancing the science of reading instruction. I think that we are going to really get some excellent outcomes from this. We're just trying to do systematic and transformational change in a very short amount of time. And again, like anything else, as you start to look at the costs and how a locally controlled school districts across the state choose to implement or choose to train, you know, we're learning that there's probably some more cost. There was some solid investment, of course, but there are some areas specifically around training, specifically around potentially if a district chooses to have people do the training outside of the school day, how do we compensate people for that? In Northfield, prior to the implementation of the READ Act, we had trained around 60 of our teachers in letters training, 144 hours. It's graduate level work. You can't say to people, show up for 3 hours after you've taught kids all day to do that. So we incentivize people with a solid stipend. These people are showing up on Saturday mornings for 3 hours, right, to do this kind of work during the school year. So I think some of those additional resources and some additional flexibility as we look at that long-term impact of the READ Act.
Thank you, Superintendent Hillman. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent, thank you for your testimony. Can you tell me how much the stipends that you're giving for the READ Act are?
So prior to our, before the READ Act, we were giving $4,000 a teacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay,
but we got 60 teachers trained, Representative Edelson. So, I mean, it really worked. And the things that we are seeing from those teachers who had the letters training, miraculous is probably the appropriate word.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you. I was the author of the READ Act, and so I'm very excited to hear that. And we're looking at actually teacher stipends right now, and we're kind of, that would be a really big amount. We're a little less than that. So, but thank you. I appreciate that. And your teachers in Northfield are really, they deserve that. We would love to do that for the state. And so we're going to try to get as close as we can.
And just
thank
if
you,
I'm...
Dr. Hammond,
yep,
sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh,
go
ahead. I'm not sure. People usually usher me off.
Nope, I have technology for the record. So that
like all 332 school districts, 331 school districts plus charter schools, we're all looking at how do we effectively use our time to train our staff and how do we balance the use of the resources that we have within that. So our estimate to train the rest of our teachers in the model we had used before, we're talking about $500,000. That's not... we didn't get that kind of money, right, from this particular excellent bill. So we're having to think about other creative ways that we can do this in a cost-neutral way, if you will, using existing time that we have and some like lots of school districts are. So we'd be grateful for additional stipends, but we're also looking at how can we get, we have 73 teachers that will be required to be trained by 2025. So getting that all done and keeping people upright is an important thing to us. They still have to work with kids every day.
Yeah. Representative Ellison, any comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Superintendent, I would just love to speak with you offline if you wouldn't.
Happy to do so.
Mind following up. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Hillman, for coming
it's my pleasure.
Up here. Next up, we have Michael Lucini, Principal of Minneapolis Public Schools, to talk about career technical education programs. And if you both also state your name for the record once you get settled and go ahead and proceed. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, my name is Michael Lucini. I am the principal for the CTE centers in Minneapolis Public Schools. I run all three centers across the district. I'm here today to talk to you a little bit about the centers and how we are moving forward as a district. So within the centers, first of all, I won't bore you going slide by slide. You guys have it in your packet, and we'll move forward as I see fit. But the centers, the reason why Minneapolis decided to move with a center model was to give each high school student an opportunity to take courses at all three centers without enrolling at that high school. So across the district, we have three centers. We have 16 pathways, over 65 courses, and we deliver our courses in three different models. One is at the center base. We have, at Edison Center, we have three pathways. At the North Center, we have six pathways. And at the Roosevelt Center, we have close to seven pathways. And the idea behind these three centers was to give students an opportunity to take courses regardless of where they attended high school. That gave them the added flexibility to try different opportunities as they go through their high school careers. The next slide that you're seeing are a snippet of what we produce are called one-pagers that we created for families and students to understand each pathways, understand the careers that are associated with those pathways, and also have an opportunity to read through the courses as a summary. So here in details are what are located at each center. So the Edison Center has our business pathway, law, and agriculture. The North pathway has computer science, cybersecurity, healthcare, emergency medical, that's first responder program we have, education, engineering, media arts, and robotics. At the Roosevelt Center, we have automotive collision, automotive engine repair, construction, healthcare, patient care, machine technology, and welding. The learning models that we have across all three centers are, we have our in-person model, we have asynchronous, where students have an opportunity to take courses without coming to any other centers and still remain at their high schools. And we also have our in-person student model, where we have our career exploration opportunities for students across the district. And our career exploration model, we have investigative careers where students can enroll in these courses and investigate specific careers. We have career planning and development. We have personal and professional skills. And career work experience and our internship program. So the benefit to these centers are, one, improved graduation rates for most at-risk youth, and we've seen the numbers. Two, maximize resources, where by having three centers enabled us to have larger purchasing power, the ability to invest in the program more. And then the third piece is incorporating graduation requirements within each course we have to offer. Additional benefits are, in terms of professional studies, related to professional career interests, preparing students for career success in ever-evolving high-tech, high-skilled, and local global economies, and equity access to all Minneapolis career pathway programs via citywide enrollment options. And I just want to take a few minutes here to just go through three examples of our focus as a district. One is our healthcare program. And within our program, we have the patient care, emergency medicine, and general practice. What you see on your screen are examples of actually unique industry-grade equipment. One, we have a simulator ambulance at the center where it's actually an ambulance that it just don't drive, but it's an actual ambulance with everything we need to teach kids about being emergency responders. And then we have the 3D dissection table that is just wonderful for kids to practice on. The next pathway we have is cybersecurity. This is, again, another opportunity for students in doing high school to really invest in understanding the courses we have, being able to learn on industrial level Palo Alto network software. And we also provide them an opportunity to get certified if they do wish to be. And the last one is our ESC program. Again, this is the first step in building career credentials as automotive server professionals. All of these courses, and one of the things, I know I'm running out of time here pretty soon for question and answer. One of the things, just to get up script a little bit, all of our courses are aligned with college credits. We give students the opportunity to elect to take the courses at the college level where when they pass at a certain grade level, they have the college credits available to them. So that way they're not debating whether they want to do PSCO or they want to do CTE. And the three advantages to the programs as we have it in Minneapolis, one is every student graduating from Minneapolis Public School that goes through the CTE Center and that are concentrators have an opportunity to graduate high school with skills that they can enter the job market right away. That's the first one. The second is a student who wants to do part-time college and work because they cannot afford to do full-time. Those students are entering the job market with higher paying wages, and they're able to afford school. And the third is an opportunity for a student who have had an opportunity to invest in the CTE courses by taking multiple and exploring what they want to do with their future. For that student, when you graduate and you decide to do full-time college, you have an investment in where you want to pursue in college. And you are not thinking when you get to be a junior what you want to do, right? An example will be a student who want to do nursing that never has been part of CTE, gets to nursing for the first time and realizes, I'm afraid of blood. You know, I don't like the smell. I don't want to be in here. And then that student now have to think about another major. The opportunity for the CTE Center is that student will invest in being around the nursing home, having an opportunity to work as an intern in a hospital, and then once they confirm what they want to do, they have enough knowledge of where they want to go that they will finish up in college if they so wish to.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Principal Lunsai. And I like what you mentioned about exploring in high school. I had an opportunity this last summer to tour the Burnsville School's pathways, and there was a young student who had thought they had wanted to do the medical profession pathway and kind of faced some of the same obstacles you mentioned and ended up moving into automotive and absolutely loving it. So, you know, schools are secondary schools are the place where students can explore and see what they want to do in a space that helps them do that. So I thank you for the model that you've built out. It's incredible. And members will probably be hearing, too, from the CTE consortiums because we've doubled the money that we gave them to help other districts kind of find those public-private partnerships, too. So with that, members, do we have any questions for Mr. Lunsai? I could talk about CTE all day, but...
Representative Samson-Murray. Thank you, for coming, and I'm just a big fan of this program, and I think it's important for more, you know, folks to know about it. And would invite, I guess, on behalf of the district, would invite any members to go see the beautiful new facility that's being built at North High School, because I think being able to see it in person is also really meaningful. My question is around Can you just talk a little bit about the CTE graduation rate reference data that I see you have in the slides? What are you learning about the ways that access to CTE courses is, you know, increasing achievement for students, graduation requirements, closing the opportunity gap?
Principal Luceni.
Madam Chair, committee members, one of the things that we are experiencing, and this is true across the country, but one of the things we're experiencing in Minneapolis is when a student have an interest in pursuing a certain idea or a career that is matched with what they want to do, oftentimes those students put aside things that are distracting them to pursue that interest. So what we say to families and to staff and district support staff is that it is not magical that a student that will have attendance issues, maybe fail in school, get to the CTE center and decide, I want to do computer programming. And the way we structure the program, students have an opportunity to go out in the field and learn and understand what computer programming is. Students have access to industrial level software. They have opportunity to come and listen to speakers. We do a lot of field trips. That allows them to begin to widen their understanding of, I want to be a computer specialist. I can smell it. I can taste it. I can see myself. That allows that student to focus more and think about graduation. And everything else that will be distracting allows that student is in a place where they can focus. And as part of focusing, meaning I need to graduate from high school, therefore I will do what I need to do to meet my requirements. That's how we see the numbers go up.
Thank you. Representative Santamura, any follow-up? Any other members? Representative Vega.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say thank you for being here and highlighting this program. I've had several experiences with youth programming throughout the Twin Cities, and in particular students from MPS who have had hands-on to media programming and mentorship through KBM Jazz 88 over North. And the glow that you see amongst kids who may have language barriers or PTSD, their connection to be able to be incorporated into a profession at such a young age really changes lives. And I think that that's something great that we've been able to advocate here through this committee and throughout our last session, is to say we're here to lead by how our kids need us to lead and what we need to support. And this program is just spectacular, and I just want to thank you for highlighting it today. Gracias.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further member questions or comments? Seeing none, Principal Luceni, thank you so much for joining us. Members, we are actually going to give you a little bit time back into your schedules. Reminder, we are not meeting tomorrow, Wednesday. We will be meeting Thursday for some bills. And next week, we will be meeting just on Thursday because of caucuses. And with that, we are adjourned.